This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
Well, I've got a St. Louis Cardinals baseball fan in the studio today as a guest on The God Show. And I bring that up at the beginning, even though this has nothing to do with faith in baseball or even faith that the Cardinals are going to make a comeback. It has to do with the future of faith, the future of religion, the future of churches, as dramatic changes are taking place in every field, in every endeavor. When you're talking about sports, you're talking about not only elements of the game changing, but I don't know that ever in the history of sports, going back to early Roman and Greek Olympic competition, I don't know whether any of those events were ever held without a crowd, without somebody cheering on the guy that crosses the finish line. But boy, the churches are just as empty as the arenas are about to be. And that's why we wanted to talk to Vernon Meyer. And Vernon, longtime guest on The God Show, fascinating guy, not only because of his 31 years as a Roman Catholic priest, but then a quick change and swerve into serving the folks at Sun Lakes United Church of Christ here in the Valley of the Sun, in the South Valley, that segment of Metropolitan Phoenix called Sun Lakes, at the United Church of Christ for the last 3 years. Welcome back to The God Show, Vernon Meyer.
Thanks. Welcome. I'm always happy when I get a call to be on the show, because I just love chatting with you and all the kinds of exciting things, especially at this time, right? My gosh, who would have thought even 5 months ago that we would be in the place that we are now? And it's been almost 2 months since I've had a Sunday church service, and never in my entire 41 years in ministry have I ever missed that many Sundays in a row of church. So it's always exciting to chat with you, Pat, and especially at this time to have a chance to talk about these exciting ideas and future.
And you're still going to be my friend, even though I'm going to root for the Diamondbacks anytime they're playing the Cardinals.
Well, yes, I think that'll be okay, because I think they only play them once a year. They used to play them twice a year, but I think lately they've only been playing them once a year. So one time a year, I guess I can stand it.
Well, and we were gracious enough to give you a Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I know. He did great last year for the Cardinals.
I have a feeling, however, and I always have had a feeling ever since I heard about your longtime loyalty to the Cardinals, because that is the sport that owns St. Louis. And I wondered if in your case, with 31 years as a Catholic priest, if it wasn't a sense of theological obligation that you would root for the Cardinals.
Well, I think there is something to that, in a sense that it's a part of the cultural identity, if you will, of St. Louis. I belong to a couple of Facebook pages that talk about St. Louis memories, and every once in a while there'll be a string of pictures going all the way back to Sportsman's Park. And I can barely remember going to that on the north side of St. Louis and thinking about, supposedly when I was born, I got a contract to, when I grew up, to be a member of the St. Louis Browns. Can you imagine that?
No.
That baseball is a part of the culture of St. Louis. And to be without these games, I'm sure they must be suffering, as all the baseball cities, especially the small market cities, where it's their whole life, in a sense, built around that. So that is something theological. You know, what provides meaning for us? What provides foundation? You know, what are we rooted in that when everything else falls apart, we can hold on to that.
Yeah, but it's so bad. It's so bad in St. Louis, Vernon, that when the College of Cardinals, when they convene at the Vatican to elect a new pope, everybody in St. Louis thinks that it's the infield and the outfielders of the baseball club getting together. Listen, talk about your church experience growing up in St. Louis, though. Roman Catholic family.
Right. Well, my father was, his side of the family were a Missouri Synod Lutheran, so very traditional, very conservative Protestant group. I wouldn't say that my family was a traditional conservative Catholic group by any means. My mom worked all the time, so she was the one who took me to church on Sunday. My dad never went to church. My grandmother lived with us, so I actually owe more to my grandmother in a sense, that she was the one who taught me to pray. Believe it or not, I still have, honest to God, I still have. I had a little altar in my room growing up that had the Virgin Mary and Saint Joseph, that was my patron, and the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and I still have those statues, believe it or not. They're just something I can't let go of, because that's what I grew up with, was that sense. And it just isn't about statues by any means, but it's about the spirituality, the sense of incarnation that Catholicism provided, that in other words, God is present in the whole world around us. And so there's beauty and sacredness and dignity to not just to human life, but beauty and sacredness and dignity to all life. I think that's what I grew up with, and that's what I hold on to even today.
The only difference, of course, is that now on the altar, the saints are joined by a statue of Stan Musial. I understand. I understand that that loyalty continues. By the way, as you grew up in a Roman Catholic / Lutheran family, was there great consternation? Was there weeping and gnashing of teeth when you became a minister in the United Church of Christ after 31 years as a Catholic priest?
No, back several years ago, if you remember, Jan Flotten, Reverend Jan Flotten, we did a joint Catholic Lutheran pilgrimage to Germany. And I remember standing in Worms, where the Diet of Worms held its sessions, and out in the field next to the cathedral, of course, is the great plaque where Martin Luther, when he came to the Diet, said, "Here I stand. You know, I can do or say, or I can't do anything else but stand on this principle." And he and I stood there, and I went, "I wonder what my Lutheran relatives would think of me at this point of standing here in this spot of Martin Luther." And to be honest with you, I think some of them might have said, "What took you so long?" What took you so long to figure out that your calling was much greater than the Roman Church, that it was more into a sense of church that is inclusive? I saw somebody, a friend on Facebook, she didn't mention my name, but she said, "Oh, yeah, I had a friend who was a Roman Catholic priest who got excommunicated because he believed in women's ordination." Well, all along I held those positions. And so it's like, wow, what took me so long to figure that out?
But even as through the centuries, religions have argued about what is truth, who's number one, what kind of worship did God originally plan that we should all join in? The one thing that we have in common now is the fact that we are not, for the most part, we are not attending services, whether it's at the United Church of Christ or any of the Catholic churches where Sunday Mass is an obligation. The Jews are still operating with empty pews in the synagogues. Talk to me about the future of religion in general, even though the United States, we acknowledge, is less a nation of joiners than it used to be. It used to be that you would go to a new town, your family would move, and one of the first things you would do is you would see where the Knights of Columbus gathered, or the Kiwanis Club, or the VFW. And even those places are not attracting folks as popularly as they used to. Then came the coronavirus. Do you really have any sense of optimism that it's going to go back to the way it was?
I don't, to be honest. At least at the moment, I'm looking at some statistics from the Pew Research, and just within the last 10 years, the numbers of those attending church has gone from 52% down to 45%.
Yes.
Just before the pandemic. So I'm just concerned, and I've said this to my folks in some lengths, I'm concerned that, you know, I like not having to go anywhere on Sunday mornings. I like sitting up as a pastor for 41 years, every Sunday for 41 years, except when I was on vacation. And even when I was on vacation, I would go to church. So, you know, Sunday mornings now to sit on the back patio and have a cup of coffee and, you know, catch up on my emails and that's been pretty cool. So, wow, what's going to happen to me when I have to get ready and go down to the church and be down there for 2 or 3 hours on a Sunday morning?
Okay, but outside of the pandemic, Vernon, outside of this unique crisis that everybody on the planet is going through, what did the churches do that made people either feel less welcome or just simply that attendance at church no longer was necessary? Because that was going on long before any virus happened.
Right, exactly.
What did the churches do?
I don't think it was anything specifically that they did, like a group of bishops or cardinals or leaders got together and said, let's do this. I think it's become a pattern of her circumstance, if you will, that people want what's genuine, what's authentic, what's true, meaning that it matches not just my experience, but it's providing a match to my search for meaning, my search for purpose in life. And when you sit in the congregation Sunday after Sunday, and it's all spiritual, not even spiritual talk, when it's all spiritual platitudes that don't necessarily have an application to my life, you walk away with a feeling that you weren't even fed, meaning fed that I had nourishment to go back to work on Monday and continue my humdrum life, if you will, that I think we've lost a sense of purpose in that. People, what's happened, it's not that they're become less religious or less spiritual, they're just less participating in organized religion, in a sense, because they see the contradictions. I think that's going to be one thing that's happened. I hate seeing, you know, the evangelical leaders cheering on the current resident of the White House and cheering on, you know, that the court is going to go back to banning abortion and we're going to, you know, go back to banning gay marriage, and we're going to go back to the way things were. And when, you know, the millennials and the Generation X people have already disconnected from organized religion, it's making Christianity out to be a farce, because that's all that the media wants to promote is, you know, those ideas. They don't promote the churches that are doing this great work of feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and visiting the sick. They rarely get those stories out. So people go, well, that's what church is. No, that's not. I mean, what I'm saying is that they look at those things and they go, well, it's a darn good thing that I stopped going to church, because, boy, that isn't what I think church should be, or who God is, or, you know, what my spirituality should be.
Do you think that there's a difference in general? Let's just talk about this country. A difference between belief in church and a belief in God. I don't see, I don't experience, I don't hear that people in general are less faithful, that they are becoming more agnostic or atheistic. I just find that it's the churches themselves or organized religion that's turning people off, not God.
Oh, I agree. I think that's true. If I, you know, I mean, we all can probably say that if we look back to when we were, you know, in Catholic grade school and what the priest and the nuns, you know, we had a German pastor at a church in St. Louis. And there were oftentimes we talk about the fact that he seemed like Hitler incarnate because that just that stern, you know, pounding the pulpit, you're all going to hell if you don't show up at confession on Saturday.
Oh, yes.
Kind of thing. And we weathered that. We made it through because we could separate out what he was saying and doing and what we believed, what my grandmother told me about God, what my mother showed to me about God. That's where it really came from. And the good nuns, I really did have good nuns growing up. The Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet were a good group of women, and I really had respect for them. You know, okay, so maybe they didn't like boys and they treated us harshly at times. But they were decent enough people. They were decent enough women. And so I have respect for that. Maybe that's where I see that women, you know, in terms of women priests and women in ministry, because I saw it in them. I saw it in them. But the disconnect is that if I, moving from being 10 years old to where I came perhaps to a greater awareness in my early 30s, that if God is love and if God is compassion, and is my stock phrase in my sermons are God is slow to anger, rich in mercy, steadfast in love, abounding in kindness, as the book of Exodus says. If that's who God is, then I want church to reflect that. And so if church doesn't reflect who I come to believe God to be, then I'm going to look for a church that's going to reflect that. Where I can celebrate that idea of God that is slow to anger, rich in mercy. If the preacher is up there telling me that God hates gays and God hates Mexicans and, you know, God wants us to, you know, to tell women what they should do with their bodies, and I go, I don't think so. Well, I'm not going to go back to that church because it doesn't match who I believe God. So I agree with you. It's not less of a belief in God. It's less of a belief in churches that portray God to be something other than what I believe in.
And yet, the fastest growing religion on the planet is about as demanding as any religion that I'm aware of, and that is Islam.
Right.
Why?
Because it provides a discipline for life. It's exactly what I say about Judaism. The way of Torah is not about obeying commandments. It's about a way of life. And Islam is about submitting myself to the will and purpose of God. And if I can submit myself to the will and purpose of God, then my life is going to, how I view the world, how I view others, how I view the kind of work that I do, is going to be shaped by that. And so it provides a discipline. And you know, I've been to many Islamic countries and witnessed prayer in the mosque, and even here at the Islamic Center here in Phoenix. And it's just amazing. There's such a committed devotion on the part of individual Muslims, women and men, in most instances, that it's almost like, wow, I wish I had that for myself. I wish that I could be as disciplined, not in a traditional straitjacket kind of way in terms of discipline, but in a way that's the starting point for everything that I do in my life. How many of us think about that? You know, when I get up in the morning, is my starting point to bring glory to God? Is my starting point to bring honor to God by the way that I treat others with dignity and respect? I think Muslims, I think many Jews do that. I think many Christians try to do that, too. Wish more of them did, but that's what I think.
I think it's interesting that Islam, as massive as it is around the globe with well over a billion members, has continued to grow. And then so does a much smaller faith that's very removed from the tenets of Islam, and that is Baha'i. That's attracting more members. Did you know that, Vernon?
I didn't know that they were growing in numbers. No, I didn't.
It's
because I think it has an inclusive view.
Yes.
It brings in all the aspects of the major religions. And while it actually is pretty traditional still in terms of women and in terms of LGBT people, it's inclusive in that sense. And I think that's what people hunger for these days.
So these days, though, do you think, Vernon Meyer, that Christianity has lost its way except for senior members of the church? What's going on with people under 40 and Christianity, for whom it seems attendance at church is just boring?
You know, I don't know, to be honest. I struggle with it in of course, in my community, where we were just chatting this morning at the office that actually in the majority of my church membership is under 75, which surprised me, because it always seemed that the majority of people were in their mid-80s.
Yes.
Part of it is, it's interesting, that the people under 75 are the active people, meaning they're very active in the church. They're very supportive of all the ministries that we have. But if there's a ball game, they'll go to a ball game on Sunday, or they'll go to a football game, or they'll go out camping, or they'll go doing that because they're free to do that. The people that are less able to travel and are less active in that sense show up in church on Sunday.
You travel the world. From what I understand, there's at least 25 trips that you've made, often with other people from the Valley, to Israel. And you've traveled throughout Europe, Asia, Australia, New Zealand. Particularly in Europe, don't you find that their attitude toward Americans and the churchgoers of this country is that we seem to be quaint and old-fashioned?
I don't know. I think, you know, you're right that the numbers have declined. How many churches or more churches probably are closing in England and Great Britain than anywhere else in the English-speaking world anyway? I think if you would go to Spain, Italy, some areas of France, certainly some areas of Germany, I think the cultural aspect of, let's say, Catholicism is still very strong for the people. But they also, interestingly enough, that those countries are countries that supported LGBT rights.
Hmm.
So wait a minute now, that culturally they display a very traditional, conservative Catholicism, Christianity, in their rituals and processions and their saints, their devotion to the saints. But socially, they're very progressive, they're very liberal. How does that happen?
I can't think of a more dramatic example of that kind of transition than what has happened in the last couple of years in Ireland, Vernon.
Right, exactly, right.
I mean, you talk about a country that operated by way of whatever the church said, that's what we're going to be, and that's what we're going to do over the centuries. And suddenly, in the last couple of years, total change legislatively about their attitudes toward gay marriage and LGBT rights and abortion.
I can't imagine that they don't feel betrayed by the church. That when you trust your church leaders, from your priests to your bishops, when you trust them to be leading you along the right path, and then you begin to find out the things that you do, you know, whether it's in the orphanages and child homes, or even nuns abuse the children.
Yes, the Irish laundries.
Right.
Terrible scandal.
So when you realize that you feel betrayed and lied to by people that you thought were so holy and so close to God, and they end up doing the things that they do. Why would you want to even continue to believe in Catholicism?
You're talking about your demographics in Sun Lakes of the United Church of Christ, and you also have contact with much younger people at Grand Canyon University. Christian school, very, very successful school that a few years ago almost closed for lack of attendance, and now it's something like 17,000 students on campus and 40,000 students online. Numbers that are astounding. But as you are talking to those people, those young people, college age people, what do you learn from them about church attendance and faith?
I teach a very select group of people, in the sense that the degree program that I teach in has a very specific focus. So it's not the general, broader university program, liberal arts program, per se. What I think they struggle with is being expected to respond to a particular view of Christianity. And they are willing to do that because they signed on for that in starting the program at Grand Canyon. And I support, that view, in the sense that it may not be exactly my taste in Christianity, but that's what they promote. That's what they teach. That's what they expect of us as instructors.
Vernon, excuse me, but for the folks not only across the country, but in different countries now who are not familiar with Grand Canyon, it's a Baptist school, right?
It was originally a Baptist school, founded as a Baptist school, and then bought and began to run by, my understanding is, by Assemblies of God, or, church like that. It's reaffirmed and reasserted its Christian vision, which it almost lost. They felt that when they adopted the model of the University of Phoenix, that they were losing their Christian identity and Christian focus. They still require students on campus to go to chapel. There's still a code of ethics and morality that the students are expected to observe. And we as faculty have a statement of faith that we agree to in order to be able to teach. So it was a more traditional, evangelical view of Christianity, and that's fine. I can accept that and work within that system and try to help the students see, because my course is a course on ethics and ethical issues in healthcare. I'm teaching right now nurses who are on the front lines. They tell me horror stories of what they're experiencing out there. And yet, to the person, they may tell me or tell the class that they don't go to church on Sunday. But from what I hear from them, they are great people of faith. And Grand Canyon, I would be very uncomfortable at ASU or U of A or other schools of telling a student what I'm able to tell them at Grand Canyon. I'll pray for you. I pray for you every day. And I'm thankful to have that opportunity at Grand Canyon to be able to say that to students, because I think that does mean a lot to the students to know that there's somebody who cares about them, who's supporting them, encouraging them in the work that they do, and to help them understand how, as nurses, that they are doing what God wants them to do. And that's really important, I think.
We're talking about the future of religion and the future of churches in this country and perhaps around the world. We're speaking with Reverend Vernon Meyer, whose background theologically is fascinating. 31 years as a Roman Catholic priest. And then was it 2010 when you when you joined the folks over at United Church of Christ.
Right. So it's been 10 years that I've been United Church of Christ now.
Let me ask you then a sensitive question, but I've known you long enough that I know I don't have to balk at these things. In joining a Protestant church, the United Church of Christ, not only as a member of the faithful, but also as a minister, was it necessary for you to turn your back on Roman Catholicism?
No, not at all. I probably had already transcended some of the expectations of what a priest and what a Catholic would be about. I missed the sense of ritual. I missed the sense of the dignity of the liturgical seasons. Many Protestant churches don't have that deep sense of ritual in that. And I don't mean stylized, formalized ritual. I just mean there's a way that we do things and a way that we celebrate things. One example that I give, Holy Thursday. I mean, you know how important Holy Thursday is within Catholicism. It's not only about the establishment of the Eucharist, but it's also about the foot washing. And there's always lots of controversy about who's going to have their feet washed and how are we going to do this. And when I was at St. Patrick's, we had always a great celebration of Holy Thursday and allowing the whole congregation to take part in foot washing. And I really loved that, that particular service. And coming into a Protestant church in Sun Lake, they had no sense of that at all. There was no sense of foot washing. There was no sense of celebrating communion. In fact, the music director at one point said, they never celebrated communion on Holy Thursday. And I went, what? How can you have Holy Thursday without celebrating communion? Well, just don't take too long when you do it because we got all this music that we have to do. And I went, holy cow, what have I done? How have I gotten myself into this when I just valued this? Well, it took 4 years, 4 years. We missed it this year, first year in 4 years. They have grown to love. We don't do foot washing per se, but we do a ritual that symbolizes the willingness that we have to be of service to others. They love what we've done with the ritual. I don't think any of them would name it as being a Catholic ritual, but boy, if we could do it in a Catholic church the way we did it in Sun Lakes, that's a great step, a movement forward for them. They really value that sense of dignity and in the ritual itself.
And Vernon, I've known you long enough to know that along with loving travel and along with loving the St. Louis Cardinals, that you also are a huge devotee of classical music and opera in particular. Please go along with me on this, because I have a theory that the music, the traditional music of the Catholic Church, has done as much as anything to turn people away from services, because Gregorian chant is so depressing. It is one of those things that, when compared with going downtown to Warren Stewart's Baptist Church and the hand clapping and the dancing in the aisles, there is such an expression of joy. And I just keep thinking that the Catholic Church, if they continue on with that traditional music, they ought to have a specialist sitting in the confessional instead of hearing confession, just going through therapy for depression.
You know what? The one time that it made sense to me was it was the 2000 when we went to the Passion Play in Omer Amigal.
Oh yeah,
and we were there early in the morning, and I guess being a priest, I wandered up to the church of all places. Why, you know, nobody else went. I went up to the church, and I got close, and oh my God, it was the most incredible music coming out of the church. And I opened the door, and they were singing Mozart's Mass. It wasn't Gregorian chant, but it was Mozart's Mass.
Yes.
So traditional Latin. I walked into the church in this beautiful Baroque church, not a huge church, beautiful Baroque church. They had a full choir and a full orchestra in the second balcony. And I went into the service and it was incredible. I went, this makes sense. That was the music for that building. You take it into one of our modern churches and it doesn't make sense. Now, lots of people don't like the modern architecture, but because there's a change in an understanding of what all of that is about. If you know, just last month, I think it was, Ray Rapp, you remember Ray Rapp?
Yes.
He died. He was the one who I first remember the guitar masses and the incredible music, because he knew how to speak to people's hearts in the ordinary way of life, that it wasn't, you know, let the choir sing and we just sit passively here, but how to become actively engaged almost before the time that Vatican II, in changing liturgy, said that liturgy should involve the full and active participation of the people in the pew. That's what's the difference about it.
And that's when we actually got to see the face of the priest that was conducting Mass. By the way, for whatever reason, attendance is dramatically off. Of course, these days, it's non-existent in most churches. But outside of COVID-19 days, attendance has been diminishing rapidly. But do you think that when people start to go back to whatever normalcy is after they believe and believe strongly that whether it's a vaccine or whatever, that they're not going to be ill again, that they're not in danger. Do you believe that they have now gotten used to online services and they're not ever going to go back, that it's a technological thing? There are drive-through churches, but most of the pandemic services are being done online. That's really convenient.
Oh, absolutely. One of my friends on Facebook posted a picture on Sunday. He said, I don't know how I'm going to like it going back to church on Sunday. And the picture showed him sitting with his slippers up on a stool drinking his coffee while the service was going on the TV. And I thought, well, that's it. That's why would I get dressed up again?
Well, the minister or the priest is going to give you one big reason to come in, collection time.
Well, yeah, but you can mail in. Most people do it by electronics these days. Although the cash out of the pocket is hurting lots of churches, because that's a lot of what they depended upon was the cash out of pocket. But most of our people give electronically or that. So you don't even need to be there anymore. Mail in your money. You don't even have to be in a collection to take it up.
But you've
that
got
is going to be one of the major challenges.
You've got to admit,
financially.
Vern, you've got to admit, a lot of churches, the biggest problem they have is not the problem of believing that they're not being able to share the word of God. It's that they're not paying the rent.
Well, I mean, from the church organization standpoint, yes, that's right. How are they going to pay the bills that they need to pay? It's interesting, you were mentioning music before. That one of the challenges we're struggling with right now in just our tiny little church is, will we be able to have a choir again in church? How are we going to do congregational singing again? We may never be able to do congregational singing again. We may never have a choir, a live choir again. And I talked to our music director. She's a PhD graduate now from ASU in conducting. And she said that most choirs are going virtual now, meaning I can sit in my home and video my little portion of the piece of music, and each instrument can do the same thing. And then somebody sits in a studio and gathers it all together, and there it is. It sounds as good as being live.
I can't imagine that the Mormon Tabernacle Choir on Zoom would ever really become a success.
That it's not going to sound the same, definitely not.
By the way, you know, we're talking about the troubles of churches and the troubles of religions and the difficulties with absentee parishioners. You know who's not having trouble? Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen, one of the one of the most successful televangelists that I can think of offhand, a contemporary phenomenon. I've had him on the show a couple of times. Very, very impressive in his presentation, not only on camera, but also in the studio. Joel Osteen, for six services every Sunday. Now, let's not talk about pandemic Sundays, but since he has had that basketball arena as a church, 52,000 people for six services, two in Spanish, every single Sunday. The church, just Osteen's church, is worth millions. And he's obviously doing something that appeals to an awful lot of people. What is it?
But you know what I think people don't see, and if I, as I understand churches like that, because you wonder how questions arose when St. Patrick's built its sanctuary that was going to seat 1,200. And Father Eric Ateas at St. Patrick's wanted to make sure that no one person would be more than 100 feet from the altar. So it was difficult. It was a challenge to be a priest and to try to see people's faces back in the back. So maybe for him, there isn't the personal connection that's important. So what if you're sitting up in the nosebleed section and when you go there, it's not important to him to know who's sitting up there. That somebody's up there is important. But who it is, do I see their face? Because that's one of the things I've missed not having Sunday service, is I really do feed off of people's faces when I'm preaching. You know, if they grimace at something I'm saying, then either I believe that I've got it right, or boy, I'm really off track. Or if I see them dozing off, then I look at my watch and I go, oh my gosh, I've already talked 20 minutes and people are dozing off on me. I can see their faces. But when you're in that big arena, it's impossible. So all you're doing is preaching almost to yourself in a sense.
But Vernon, he's a rock star. He's a rock star performing before arena crowds, and they can't get enough of him. So if you're up in the nosebleed section, you're not complaining. He's obviously doing something right.
Well, but I think what people don't see, and if I understand how that system works, is that all of those people are grouped into smaller churches or smaller groups, whether they be neighborhood groups or whether they be family groupings or, you know, that there's 20 or 30 groups that meet in 20 or 30 people on Monday and the same number of groups on Tuesday. So that the real experience of church is happening in those smaller groups. Even the Catholic Church had talked about small church communities, that it was happening in the homes. I bet if you really looked beneath the surface of what he does on Sunday, that I bet you would find that network of home churches, smaller groupings of people. So that's where they're getting the connection from. He's like the cheerleader, if you will, comes out on Sunday. And before he even preaches, right, there's a big musical production that goes on. You know, big choir, big loud music group that gets up there, and so it stirs up the crowds and gets everybody in the spirit, so to speak. And then he comes out and maybe speaks for what does he speak, 45 minutes to an hour, and then he goes away. But then people go home or go to their small groups, and that's where the community and the connection is being made in those small groups.
But you got
to you
got to admit, Vernon, there's an awful lot of ministers and priests and imams and rabbis who would love to be able to attract, whether it's with music and production and lighting or not, that they would love to be able to attract Sunday after Sunday, that kind of 16,000 per service. Oh, and by the way, you know what else he doesn't do? He doesn't ask for money on television. Unlike the Pat Robertsons, the Jimmy Swaggerts and the Oral Roberts, and I must tell you, Billy Graham, you know, there's not that constant pitch. If you want us to pray for you, send us an offering. That's appealing to me.
But you know, I'm not sure I agree that what what minister or imam or rabbi wouldn't want that. I think that you would find that the majority of us would not want that, because the personal connection is what matters. The personal connection between myself and a congregant matters. That's what I'm missing the most in the 2 months that I'm not there on Sunday. When I moved from one parish to another parish, I went and I tested it out first. I said, I want to know if, as a priest or a minister, I can pray with this congregation. Can I pray with this congregation? Not just be the leader of the prayer, mm-hmm. but can I pray with the congregation? If I can't pray with this congregation, then I'm not going to be able to preach in this congregation. I think most pastors and most ministers and imams would say the same thing, that we have to be able to pray within that community. I don't know if that's his, if he would say the same thing. I think evangelical Christians don't see the community as being a part of their prayer life, a part of their spirituality. We see an importance in community, that there is something about the community coming together, not just listening, not just being entertained by a great band, and not just listening to an inspiring speaker, but to have a sense of connectedness that comes in community. I think if church is going to survive in the future, that's what we're going to have to promote more of.
But Pope Francis says Mass to the largest congregation at the Basilica of St. Peter's. This massive congregation, not even including those he greets outside from the balcony. St. Peter's, the largest Christian church there is. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how much it seats, or how many it seats, but it's a massive congregation.
Right.
I've been there for Mass.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I wasn't overcome with the size of it. There was still a warmth and a personality to it. But there's an awful lot of folks who take a look at St. Peter's and says, mm-hmm. maybe bigger is better.
yes and no. I think per the earlier part of the conversation, that if regular church attendance is declining, it's sort of like Joel Osteen and their groups of people are riding a crest that's going to collapse on them eventually.
Really?
I think so. I think I would bet that if you went through and really looked at the ages of people in those groups of people, you might find some of the millennials in that. You might find some of the Generation X in that group, but you're going to find more the middle age group people.
Why is it, Vernon Myers? Why is it that conservative fundamentalists and evangelicals are still showing up for church, even when it was essentially against the law, as governors were saying, no, we can't have services and we can't gather like this because it's unhealthy. Evangelical ministers were saying, hey, forget it. I'm in charge here. We're going to go to church on Sunday. And the place was packed.
If this may sound really crazy, and I hope you don't get too many letters about this, I think they're hedging their bet.
Tell me what you mean.
What if, hedging the bet in the sense that if I'm being told that I can't get to heaven without Jesus, if I can't get to heaven without membership in this church, then I'm going to make darn sure I send my money in and that I'm seen there on Sunday. So that my bet is hedged, that Jesus, without Jesus, I can't get to heaven. And they identify that with being a member of that church. I think the rest of us, and maybe that's why the decline in church membership is happening, that Jesus is maybe not in church or exclusively in church, but Jesus is out in the streets. How many of the liberal, radical people of even Dorothy Day, for all of her traditional Catholicism that she actually was, she said, unless you see the face of Jesus in the poor first, you can't see the face of Jesus in the Eucharist. So maybe that's what people are learning. They're not seeing the face of Jesus in the church. They're seeing the face of Jesus out on the streets. I remember going to Jeff Proctor Murphy's church over in Scottsdale, and it was about the many faces of Jesus. It was the season of Lent. And first, probably among the first times that I had been to a Protestant service, and went into the church, and it was all about that. And oh my God, he was baptizing a baby, and there was an artist on the side that was painting a picture of the baby, and they were showing a video. And I went, oh my God, look at all the ways in which we can see the face of Jesus. It wasn't in one place, it was in many places.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the long run, I think churches that allow for that opportunity to see the face of Jesus in many ways, I think they will, institutionally, they may not flourish or survive. But church, meaning the gathering of the folk, the gathering of the people, that will survive.
Haven't you seen the face of Jesus in so many of the stories in different parts of the world? And Jesus, in so many of those cases, is wearing an antiseptic mask, doing good things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where it is. Absolutely. And you know what? They may not even be practicing Christians that are doing that.
Sure.
I'm not ready to go Karl Rahner's way of talking about the anonymous Christian, because I don't think that one has to be a Christian in order to enjoy eternal life. But there's something to that. That who Gandhi, didn't he say, when asked about whether why he wasn't a Christian, he was always talking about Jesus, and he said, "If I knew one, I might become one." whether he said that or not, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. He wasn't a bad guy, was he?
No, my gosh, look at his life.
Listen,
I mean, the best parts of his life.
Vernon, before we run out of time, listen. If we begin talking about Gandhi, then we have to start talking about Mother Teresa.
There you go.
And I want to find out from you, before we run out of time, briefly what the Arizona Center for Theological Studies is.
We were originally founded to provide a safe place within which theological conversation and dialogue could happen, much like what we've just done in this hour. That we were not officially connected to a given church. So therefore, we didn't have to defend the doctrines and dogmas of church, but we could come together to discuss, to talk about, to develop, to see how evolving faith could happen for us, that it was a safe place within which conversation about God, about sacraments, about Jesus, about faith, about Islam and Hinduism and that we could talk in a safe environment and not feel embarrassed or ashamed or threatened by each other's beliefs. That's what it was about.
Now, Vernon, you're a Midwestern guy, and I don't even know if you know this about me, but my oldest son went to Notre Dame, and that allows me, far more than this program or what I do spiritually on Sundays, my son's presence on the campus of Notre Dame, that allows me a certain amount of freedom to be able to create this promise to you. So God says to me, every so often we have a nice conversation, and he's very, very gracious, he or she. And he says, "You're going to be talking to Vernon Meyer, and he's doing good things, just as he did as a Catholic priest. He's doing good things as a Protestant minister. See if he, in 1 minute, can give to me, through you, Pat, to give to me a change in organized religion that I would find valuable." Vernon Meyer, you're on.
I mean, I've said it for a number of years. Tell the bishops, the Pope, to let women be priests. The voice of faith that is proclaimed on Sundays can't just come from men. So just as God spoke to the Mormon leaders to say it's okay for African Americans to be Mormons, God speak to the cardinals, the bishops, the Pope, and not to dilly-dally around any longer. Women have the sustainers or the nourishers of faith. Stop refusing to let them become priests.
You know, if that happens in our lifetime, you know, you and I are going to get credit for that, Vernon.
I hope so. I wouldn't mind that at all.
what an incredible transition that would be for a church desperate for clergy. And you know what? The Catholic Church is one less one of the really good guys, but the United Church of Christ has benefited from that. And so I think,
thank you.
I think too, also, we all have, regardless of what it says when we put down religion on one of those forms. Vernon Meyer, United Church of Christ in Sun Lakes, want to have a good time on the Sundays when it's open. This is Pat McMahon on The God Show. 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 McMahon on The